Morning. Today's daf number of Zeres, Lamed Aleph, we are on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, discussing various types of kalim. The Gemara talked yesterday about using leather pouches and earthenware jugs, and what would happen if if some of the Stam Yanim went into these pouches and jugs? Is it okay? Would I have to kasher them? If I have to kasher them, how do I kasher them? So that was the discussion we had in Nevodah Zara and Daf Lamed Gimel yesterday's daf. We learned yesterday that the general rule of the Gemara is that if you have something which was used for storage of wine, and when I say storage of wine, meaning it's basically cold. There was never any cooking done in such a container. It was basically just used for storage, but the wine sat in there for some time. So there is a way of rinsing it out in terms of kashering. Kashering not in the classic sense of I'm going to cook and I'm going to be polite, I'm going to extract, I'm going to expunge the taste out of it. But in other words, there's a way of going through some sort of rinse cycle that'll get out the flavor. So the Gemara on the bottom of Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, which we saw yesterday, said that basically what you're going to do is you'll do iri. In other words, you'll rinse it out where I'm going to fill up the jug for a 24-hour period, then flush it out, rinse out the water, then refill it again another 24 hours, and then do it, and then flush it out, and then refill it again for a third 24-hour period. So under those circumstances, that is a way of kashering these types of kalims. Whether they are leather jugs or whether they're earthenware jugs, says Rashi, it doesn't matter. It's a means of doing so. The Gemara entertained other ways of doing it as well, meaning using other forms of liquids, perhaps even stronger liquids. We talked yesterday a little bit about using different types of brines in terms of flushing out the flavor and extracting the flavor, and the Gemara, that was the Gemara. We quickly entertained the idea of maybe storing beer inside of it, and we are basically in the Gemara now on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. We're about more than halfway down in the Amud. Amar Rav Yusna, Amar Rabbi Ame. Okay, so the Gemara now continues. The first word in the line is Maya, and the Gemara now is just going to continue discussing a couple more of these types of kalims. I'm Rav Yusta, I'm Rabbi Ami, Kli Neser, and Lotaharo Lamis. So if you have Kli Neser, a type of Kli, Rashi over here describes it, helps us understand it just a little bit better. The Rashi, let me just find it first. I'm sorry, before we go to the Rashi. My Kli Neser, back to the Gemara. What is Kli Neser? I'm Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin, Kli Machpor Shel Tzrif. It is Kli Machpor Shel Tzrif. Now let's turn to Rashi's. Thank you. Machpor Shel Tzrif, Rashi, Karka Shechofrim Misham Tzrif. So it's basically, it's a kind of ground. It's used for, the ground is used for building material, building a hut. Rashi gives it a name of Alam or maybe Baisa. Anyway, because it is so porous and because it's so it absorbs so much, so therefore there's no way of koshering it. The Beit Parzik Rufile Anas Hani Kuvei BePumbadisa Rama Bechama Adrin Nihalayim. A story we saw, a very similar story like this yesterday. The Gemara tells a story where you have a non-Jew who basically took a jug of a Jew, filled it with Stam Yenam, and basically said, okay, here, take it back. So, Shailula Rav Yehuda, so they asked a question from Rav Yehuda, and Amar Davashay Machnis Lekimu Mishach Shecham Bemayim Vehimutar. So he says, look, if you're talking about where Stam Yenam was in there for just a short amount of time, it's Enam Lekium, it wasn't there for a long period of time, it wasn't there for storage, it didn't absorb. Remember yesterday we introduced ourselves to the idea of Kavushka Mavushal, that if something soaks in there for a considerable amount of time, so then it in fact does get a considerable amount of absorption. But over here, Mamish, what we're talking about is just it was there for a really short amount of time. So all you need to do is just rinse it out and that would be fine. Amra Vavira, Hani Chatzve Shechima De Arma. Don't have to wait 3 days. Shach Shecham B'mayim. A simple rinse is all you need. Hani Chatzve Shechima De Arma. So the Gemara here describes some sort of earth that was used. It was a red earth that was used. So this kind of earth that's used is not very porous, and therefore, again, it doesn't have much of an absorption. So even if it's used for wine, You basically just have to rinse it out, and that's all you need to do. Amar Papi Haini Pasvasa Debe Michse Kevin Dol Abali Tuv Meshach Shemayim Matarim. The Gemara describes other types of kalim. Okay, it's a type of earthenware jug, but it comes from very hard ground. And again, so it's not porous, and therefore, even though wine was stored in it, but again, remember, it's cold. The only thing we have to take into consideration is maybe an absorption, but because the material is so, it is not porous, therefore it doesn't have much of an absorption, rinse it out, it would be fine. Kase. The Gemara talks about cups now. Cups, by definition, meaning regardless of what material is used to make the cups, but by definition, you're not storing wine in a cup. You pour the wine in the cup, you drink from the cup, and that's it. So in other words, so what kind of, if I want to use a cup that was already used for Stam Yenam, what do I do? And Rav Asi, Asav Rav Ashi Shari. So that's a machlokus, whether it would be Mutter or Asar. Mutter or Asar, Rashi over here points out, without Iri Gimel Yamim. Meaning if you use Iri Gimel Yamim, as we learned in the Amud Aleph of yesterday's Daf, so then of course it would be fine. You can even take items that were used for storage, and Iri Gimel Yamim, and go through 3 24-hour periods of rinsing, and that would be fine. Over here, where just the question on the table is that for these cups, because they're not used for long-term wine holdage, wine storage, so maybe just a simple rinsing would be all you need. Now the Gemara over here makes an interesting distinction. If let's say first time usage was given to a guy, meaning that the first thing that it absorbed was Stam Yenam. So then the Gemara says, interestingly, there is no machlokis, and there's no machlokis that you need to go through a 3-day soaking period. Now, in other words, we're talking about where the guy used it after the first time. What's the difference first time, second time? So so Rashi explains over here that basically when we're looking at the first time, so all the pores are open and no liquid has gone into the pores yet. So basically now, when you're using it for the first time, so there is a full absorption of whatever you're putting into that cup, even though it's just for a short period of time, but a full absorption into that cup. And therefore, if you want to get it out, if you want to extract that out, so you have to go through the 3-day soaking process. But if it's the second time, so second time means already that you used it already once for wine, kosher wine. The kosher wine now basically filled up all the pores. There is going to be a little bit of the Stam Yenam that's going to go in, but a simple rinsing is all you need. Now, Igadim, the Gemara has a slightly different version of this discussion. In the second version, basically everything we just said above, but, in other words, first and second usage is when the pores are really open and are going to collect and absorb whatever's being poured in there. By the third time already, so it's pretty much, those pores are pretty much filled, and therefore no need to be concerned.
The first 2 times was kosher wine.
No. In other words, whatever is being used there for the first 2 times is really what's going to fill those pores. Right. So for the first 2 times it's not kosher wine, so that means that you're going to have to kosher in order to use it. And koshering meaning soaking it for 3 days like we described in the Amud Aleph. And the Gemara concludes over here that for the first 2 times, that's when the pores are open and really going to absorb, and therefore whatever's poured in there for the first 2 times is going to fill them in. If it's not kosher wine, it needs to be extracted with the 3 days of soaking, and if it's kosher wine, so that's good. Meaning, and now it fills in those pores. And from the third time and onward, basically, a simple rinsing is all you need. Amrazvid, Haimani Dekunya Chivre Ve'uchme Shari. Yeroka Aser. Razvid says, so look, if you have these types of kalim which has a pitch lined in them, we described this yesterday in a little more detail, where basically what they would do is that they would pour like some sort of molten lead into the leather thermos, and it would create a sealant inside. As it cooled down, it created a sealant inside. Over here, we're talking now about kalim, where there was some sort of glaze on the kalim, and the Gemara says if it's a white or a black glaze, so that's fine. However, Yeroka Aser, but if it's a, let's call it yellow, let's call it green, but in other words, but if it's a colored glaze, so then that's no good. Mishum Demitzref. So the Gemara says because that when it comes to these yellow glazes, so these yellow glazes are open and porous, and therefore whatever you pour in is going to be absorbed by the glaze. The Isbu Kartufni Kule Asire. Now, if you're looking at the glaze and you see that the glaze is not a clear glaze, but there are cracks throughout the entire glaze. Now you know that basically whatever liquid you're running through it is going to get absorbed, and therefore it's all going to be aser. Darsh Maremer, Kunya Ben Uchma Ben Chivre Ben Yeroka Shari. Marimer got up in front of the tzibur, and he darshaned, and he said, I don't care if it's black or white or yellow or green, it's all going to be mutter. The Gemara says, okay. So Marimer's makel on all this, and the Gemara says, that's fine, but I'll tell you the problem. I know another psak by Marimer, and the Gemara says, and I don't know how these two psakim stand side by side. Because honey, money de kunya ma'ali shamshu b'pepischa. So they basically, kalim that you want to use now on Pesach. Pesach, obviously we have a consideration of chametz. We have chametz is zasser for the seven here in Galus, 8 days of Pesach. And so basically what you have to make sure is not only that you don't eat chametz, but you can't eat any kalim that absorb the taste of chametz. And so basically they were talking about these kinds of earthenware jugs with the glaze on it. So can I use them for Pesach? So his answer, this is Marimer's answer. And he says, so Yeroka loti bailach de mitzarfe ubale v'asire. So Marimer says the yellow glaze, ugh, they're the worst. For sure they're going to absorb the chametz be Pesach, and for sure I can't use these kalim on Pesach. Kiti bailach yivre v'uch meimai. And he says, as far as the shaila is concerned, so if it's black or white glazes, so ki isbu kartufne loti bailach de vade bala v'asire. And again, Marimer's tendency was to say, look, if you're looking at the glaze and you see the cracks in the glaze, for sure it absorbs chametz, and for sure it's going to be a problem. The Gemara says, but if we're talking about a black or a white glaze, and it's nice and smooth, and can I now use them from year-round use, and can I use them on Pesach? So, Amar lohu, ana chazina lohu, demidemaise v'kevan, demidaise vade bala v'asiri. So he says, but take a look. In other words, look at these kelim over here, and you're going to basically see that as you're pouring in on the inside, you see it sweating on the outside. Meaning basically you see that it's so porous that some of the liquid actually seeps and goes all the way through. So basically what are we looking at over here? We're looking at something that does have some sort of absorption, and therefore you can't use it on Pesach. If you use it for chametz year-round, you can't use it on Pesach. My time, huh? So the Gemara says, and I'll tell you why. Atari Ida al kli cheres she'enu yotze midei dofne la'olam. So he says, because look, we know that when it comes to kli cheres, it has an absorption, and the absorption goes so far in, it's so deep, that it cannot be extracted, it can never be extracted. So the Gemara says, that is the Meremar Pesach regarding chametz on Pesach, and specifically kli cheres on chametz on Pesach. So the Gemara says, here's basically what I'm struggling with. Now you probably all already know the answer. Meaning the answer is kind of so obvious that you almost wonder what the question was. But let's just set up the question. So the Gemara says, I have two psaks by Marimer. One regarding earthenware jugs used for Stam Yenam, and another regarding earthenware jugs that were used year-round that now want to be used on Pesach. And basically, where does he stand? He stands in two different camps. One camp being Mekel, and the other one being Machmer. When it comes to the earthenware used for Stam Yenam, so Marimer was basically of the opinion it's all good. In other words, it has the glazing on it, and the glazing is good. It'll protect the earthenware jug. And I don't care, says Marimer, if it's black or white or yellow. In other words, all those glazings are going to be good enough to basically protect it. So all I need to do is just simply empty out the contents of the Stam Yenam, give it a good rinse, and you're good to go. And meanwhile, when it comes to chametz on Pesach, meaning when the earthenware jugs were used for chametz, so now Marimer said, you know what? It's never good. It's never, for sure, if it's yellow, it's not good. Even if it's white and black, if you see the cracks, it's not good. And even if I don't see the cracks, I'll tell you what. Marimer says it's not good. It's not good. I can't use my earthenware jugs with a glaze on Pesach. Because the Torah says that once earthenware has absorbed, it's never going to be fully expunged. So, how could he take two, what seemingly is opposing sides? V'chite, Imam. Now, the Gemara says, now maybe you'll say, chametz d'oraisa yayin esach d'rabanan. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we're talking about chametz b'Pesach, it's an issur d'oraisa, and we can add to that, but not only is it an issur d'oraisa, but it's an issur kares, so it's really serious. And we're talking here about stam yenam. I know the Gemara uses the term yayin nesach, but when the Gemara here in this context uses yayin nesach, it means wine that was handled by a non-Jew, it's stam yenam. And so it's an issur d'rabanan. So the Gemara says, maybe that's the difference. The Gemara says, v'akol d'takun rabanan kein d'oraisa takun. Generally speaking, as we know, whenever the Chachamim institute and they legislate, so the way they model and pattern themselves is after the Din D'oraisa. So if the Din D'oraisa would say that I can't use it, so then the Din D'Rabbanan usually parallels and models the Din D'oraisa, and therefore I can't use it. So the Gemara says, so that can't be the answer. Ella, this must be the answer. Zeh tashmish b'chamim v'zeh tashmish b'tzonim. So the Gemara gives the answer, which, again, probably you would have guessed correctly. And that is, look, when we're talking about Stam Yenam, you're not cooking the wine in these earthenware jugs. You're simply pouring it into the earthenware jugs, and they're just going to store there, but they're going to store there cool. There's not going to be any heat. So there's not going to be any heat. So any absorption is coming just simply by the wine sitting there, and it will fill a little bit within the cracks and crevices of the earthenware. But in other words, but it's not going to be a deep blia, it's not going to be a deep absorption. Masha'inkin, when you're talking about cooking something in a kli cheres, so there now with the addition of heat, so now there's going to be a full blia, a full transfer of taste from the food into the kli cheres. There's such a full transfer of taste that it's just simply not going to be able to be expunged, regardless of how hard we try. Okay, ad kan. Top Tosfos over here, by the way, talks about what about throwing it back into the kiln? Meaning we talked about this in yesterday's daf, where we allowed the kli cheres to be thrown back into the kiln, and that would be okay. But that was for wine storage, meaning where it was cold. Can we throw back into the kiln even if it was for chametz? Okay, so see the top Tosfos over here who discusses that issue. We're going to continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Akiva ikla leginzak bal minei. Rabbi Akiva goes to the town of Ginzak, scholar in residence over there in Ginzak, and three questions asked from Rabbi Akiva, and I know it's Rabbi Akiva, and you know we assume that he knows everything. But three questions in which they stumped him on. So they are as follows. Number one, matanel shows, so ain't matanel shows. So can you fast for hours or can you not fast for hours? I'll explain the question better in just a moment. Lo hava biyade. So he didn't know the answer to that question. Number two, kan kan shalv di kochav masurim mutarim. If let's say I have earthenware jugs of a guy, is it asur? Is the motor lo hava biyade? And that too, he didn't know the answer to. And finally, ba mesh shimish moshe shiva koshiva simei amululim. Moshe served in the Mishkan for the 7 and 8 year old days. We know that before the Mishkan went into operation, formally, officially, opening day in the Mishkan was the first day of Nisan in the second year in the desert, in the Midbar. So, but we know also that for the 7 days leading up to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so there was the Yemei HaMiluim. They were basically days of practice, right? Spring training, if you will. I know a lot of these sports analogies don't go, you know, aren't taken well, but the right. But it was basically, it was spring training for 7 days. Who served in the Beis HaMikdash for those 7 days? The answer is Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe served in the. He was the presiding Kohen, so to say, for the 7 days. The problem, of course, is that he wasn't a Kohen. So when he served in the Beis HaMikdash for those in the Mishkan, I should say better, for those 7 days. So what did he wear? Meaning, what was the clothing that he wore? He wore the big day kahuna. No, for reasons which I'm going to explain better in just a moment. Why that's not even on the table for discussion. So if he's not wearing the big kahuna, so what is he wearing? So lo hava biyade, and again, Rabbi Kiva said that's a great question, and I don't know. So 0-3 on these three questions. So so let's just go back now, and let's just better understand all three of these questions. This is for question number one. Mitan l'shalos, do I fast for hours? What is that? Rashi explains over here. Tosfos over here is lengthy, but I'm just going to present it simple like Rashi. And Rashi over here says like this. Meaning, you, let's say, skip breakfast, and you get to lunch, and lunch is already now a little bit later, and basically, how much time is left until the end of the day? You know what? I didn't eat yet today, but not for religious reasons. In other words, I just didn't get a chance to eat yet. You know what? Can I make a tannis out of this? In other words, I want to now make a formal tannis. And I'll get to mincha, and I'll daven with the inclusion of Anenu and Mincha. So in other words, let's make this a formal fast. Can I do that? That was the question that was posed to Rabbi Akiva. Meaning that you didn't take on the fast in the beginning of the day, but it just happens to be that you get now to the early afternoon, you haven't eaten yet. You know what? I'll turn this into a religious event. I'll fast. I'll formally fast. I'll make it a tannis. So does that work? And when I say, does that work? In your mincha, can you add your additional tefillos? So that was the question that was posed to Rabbi Akiva. That was question number one. Question number two is a question that we kind of been dealing with now, so for the last daf of Gemara, meaning a daf Lamed Gimel, is basically the question of Blia. And the question that was posed to Rabbi Akiva is if let's say you have the kli cheres, but it hasn't been used for some time, for some significant period of time. Can I basically say that whatever absorption it's got basically has become old, stale, and totally irrelevant and non-significant? That was the second question that was asked to Rabbi Kiva. And the third question, as I explained just a little bit better, is what did Moshe wear during the seven inaugural days prior to the opening day. The answers that are given, however, the Gemara gives the answers, even though Rabbi Kiva himself at the time did not know the answers. So the anytime, by the way, you have a scholar in residence in town and you ask him a question, he doesn't know the answer. So just remember our Gemara over here. It's okay. Rabbi Kiva didn't know the answers to some of these questions. It was not Rabbi Kiva? Okay, fine. Okay.
Because Rashi considered what Rabbi Kiva would not have to answer the question.
Okay, fine. Okay. So the Gemara says, oh, there must be Rashi Tanis. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara says Ve'ilchasa can kind of shalv dikol chavim. Sorry, let me go back one line. Asa shalv be medrasha. He goes and asks question in the base. Medrasha amar tfilas tanis. I'm sorry. Ve'ilchasa metan l'shanos. Ve'imishlim mesval tfilas tanis. Okay. So answer number one, yes. In other words, if you made it halfway through the day and now you want to complete the day in a fast and you want to add your Anenu and your Shemona Esrei, the Gemara says, by all means. That's a question. That's why it's a question. Correct.
So the Gemara is saying that you don't have to, you could...
It's better if you do, but in other words, there happens to be that you got to the middle of the day and now you realize... Well, 5 hours, I can go. I can go 5 hours without eating. That's fine. And then answer number two. In other words, if you have an earthenware jug and it was used for wine storage of Stam Yenam, after 12 months, it's good. Meaning, basically, whatever taste was in there after a 12-month period is gone. So it's lost. It's gone. It's totally not significant. And then finally, Bamesh Shima Shmosha Shivas Yimei Amaluin Bechalak Lavan. So he served in a white garment, and Rav Kahana Masni Bechalak Lavan Shuhu Bo Imra. And he says it was a white garment that didn't have any hems to it. Okay, now on this last question, let's just spend just a moment, another moment together on this last question of Moshe Rabbeinu. So as I pointed out, that the question on the table is, what did he wear at the time? So Tov Rashi over here points out that. The what he wore was a white garment that didn't have an imra, didn't have an hem. So Rashi says, what I just said in the Gemara is what Rashi over here says is a pshat. Safa yesh omer shaloi chashtua shesham ba mitshumas hamishkan. So in other words, remember those mishnayos and shkalim. I mean, I know it's been a long time since when we learned shkalim, but remember back in the day in mesechta shkalim. So we know that when you do the trumas alishka. Right, two Shabbos ago we read about Parsha Shkalim. So when you're in the Trumas, when you're in the Lishka and you're taking off the Trumas Lishka, so you have to go in with no pockets and no hems and no cuffs. Meaning you have to be wearing something where there's no way you're even beyond suspicion that you're going to take some of the money and you're going to pocket some of the money. Okay, so you have to go in a totally free and clear garment. Rashi says the same thing over here, but Rashi realizes, I don't understand, it's a strange comparison. There we're talking about going into the treasury, and going into the treasury and not having pockets on you. I understand, but over here we're talking about doing the avoda. V'lav milsa, Rashi himself admits, sharei kvar nigmar hamalacha v'shas avoda me'echad shakil. We're talking about doing the avoda over here. There's no treasury. You're not pilfering from any kind of treasury. So Rashi admits over here the pshat is a little bit difficult in terms of what exactly the Gemara means when it says it's a garment without a hem on it. If you take a look at Tosfos over here, so just a really interesting Tosfos in terms of why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu did not wear the big day kahuna? Meaning if he's serving as a kohen, so then let him wear the big day kahuna. So Tosfos over here offers a couple of explanations in terms of why it is they didn't wear the big kahuna. One suggestion, says Tosfos, is that the begadim were simply not ready yet, meaning that the begadim were not going to be ready until they were anointed, and the anointment took place on the first day of Nisan, so they just simply weren't ready yet. That's one possibility of Tosfos. But he also offers another suggestion. See the Tosfos by Meshi Meshmoshe, where you'll see this in much greater detail. But a really interesting suggestion, and that's as follows. In other words, remember during the seven inaugural days, so what Moshe would do is he would set up the Mishkan, but then he would take it apart. Set it up and take it apart, and he would do that every single day. So basically, says Tosfos, as another suggestion, is that it didn't have the status of a Mishkan. Because in other words, it wasn't set up for a semi-permanent basis. So, I mean, in the desert anyway, I mean, the Mishkan wasn't set up for permanence anyway. In other words, there was always a movement. But at least when it was set up, it was there for whatever, a period of time. But you knew, Moshe knew that he was gonna take it apart at the end of every day. So therefore it had the status not of a Mishkan, but rather of a Bama. And for a Bama, you don't wear the Big Day Kahuna. You only wear the Big Day Kahuna when you're serving in the Mishkan or in the Beis HaMikdash. Another suggestion of Tosfos. And finally, just one more point to make, and that is, Tosfos also suggests something about the Imra. Tosfos over here says, the Gemara says, Im ba Imra. Rashi struggled. Rashi said, I really don't know what's going on over here, because what does the hem have to do with anything over here? We're not talking about going to the treasure. We're talking about doing the Avodah. Let it have a hem. What's the big deal with a hem? So Tosfos over here says, Imra, even though the Gemara says it with an aleph, but maybe we can understand it as with an ayin. Meaning, with this week's parsha, we're going to be learning together, that the begadim of a Kohen had shanes, meaning it was made up of wool and linen. Ah, but Moshe over here wasn't doing formal avoda. It was pre-avoda. It was spring training. It was, what?
Temporary.
It was right. It was right. It was not the fully sanctioned avoda. So for him now to be wearing begadim with wool and linen, no, you can only wear wool and linen. Mm-hmm. If you're doing the avoda, we're there now, the essay is being docha, the los assay. But since this is now not the formal avoda per se, so therefore what the Gemara says, it's ein bo imra, it means it doesn't have wool. Meaning it's only linen, it doesn't have wool, because he can't wear a baguette of wool and linen, because he's not doing the formal avoda. That is another suggestion of Tosfos right here on the Amud. Okay, let's go back to the Gemara, let's continue in the Gemara. Chartzan v'zag mishalav de kochavim, Tanu Rabbanan, Chartzan v'zag mishalav de kochavim, lachem asurim yaveshim mutarim. Okay, let's take ourselves back to the Mishnah. We're talking now about seeds and skins of a grape. So the Gemara says that once they are fully dried, so then according to while they're moist, so according to Rameir, they're asr b'achila, and they're asr b'ana as well. And the Chachamim said, no, they're asr b'achila, but not b'ana. Once they're dry, so the Brice over here, as the Gemara now quotes, says, is that it's mutter. And Rashi points out over here, when the Gemara says mutter, the Gemara. Let's continue the Gemara. Hainin ulachiv, hainin yaveshim, what's dry, what's not dry? I'm reviewed, I'm a shmo, lachim kol yud beis chodesh, yaveshim lachim yud beis chodesh. So just like we said regarding the earthenware jugs, now we're saying regarding the skins and the seeds of the grape. If the skins and the seeds of the grape are just left out to dry for 12 months, so now all the lachluchis is gone, all the moisture is gone, and basically now it's totally mutter. It ma'amar abba b'b'chana ma'vyochen k'she nasur nasur nafilu ba'anak, k'she mutarin, mutarin nafilu ba'achila. And we are binary over here. Meaning that when they have the moisture of the grape, and it was handled by a guy, it's aser. You can't get benefit from it, you can't eat it, and you can't get benefit from it. And when it's fully dry after 12 months, it's totally mutter, where you can both eat it, and you can get benefit from it. I understand we're eating something that's so bone dry. I mean, what? All right, but anyway, but you can eat it. Right. Stand by. I'll actually make a suggestion in terms of what we could do with it. Dregs that were used by a non-Jew. So in other words, at the wine production, so on the bottom of the vat, so there are going to be these dregs, and they're good. And they, in other words, when I say they're good, meaning what you can do with these dregs is basically you can reconstitute wine. You can make like a type of wine drink. It's not wine per se. It's not, in other words, it's not like the Cheres Hedreni, which we discussed just a couple of days ago, where there was so saturated with wine concentrate that when you reconstituted it, it was like real wine. Over here with the dregs, what you do is you pour some water over it, and you get, basically flavored, wine flavored seltzer. something like that. So what the Gemara now is saying is that with these dregs, if you let them dry for 12 months, so then they're going to be mutter. And again, so now what are you going to do with it? So I don't fully know, but I have a clue. I have at least a clue in terms of what you could do with it. Tosfos over here on the bottom of the Amud has a really interesting debate. First of all, Tosfos deliberates whether or not you could accelerate the drying process. Meaning the Gemara says, how long a period do you need for drying? So you need 12 months. So what if, let's say, I roast them? Is that going to accelerate the drying process? So there is an opinion in Tosfos that says yes. In fact, you could take a look at the very beginning of Tosfos, where he quotes, Perish manish of the kocham harav rabbeinu Ephraim ha'yomer, ki misvara shmam shenizyashu betanur, molem kmo hamtana, diyud beis chodesh. And mitokach, So the Rabbeinu Ephraim over here has an interesting kula, really interesting leniency, where if I dry them in the oven, that accelerates the drying process like 12 months, like 12 months on the open air wood. And on top of that, Rabbeinu Ephraim says, if now let's say these dregs are used for a catalyst in order to ferment the dough. In other words, back then fermentation was done with, we have yeast. Back then they used organic material. So they threw in either sourdough or they threw in some fruit. And basically the enzymes within the fruit caused the fermentation process. So what Rabbeinu Ephraim allowed is basically the dregs of these non-Jews, as long as they were roasted in the oven, so that accelerated the drying process, and now he allowed that to go into the dough in order to allow the dough to rise, and Rabbeinu Ephraim says, I think it's fine. A very interesting kula. Rabbeinu Tam disagrees, Rabbeinu Tam says no, and Rabbeinu Tam says, in fact, I'll tell you what, Rabbeinu Tam says, as far as our Gemara is concerned, for the dregs, now remember, the dregs, by the way, unlike the seeds are mamish, they already start off pretty dry to begin with. The dregs are literally saturated with the flavor of the wine. Rabbeinu Tam, in this very same Tosfos, goes on to say that he doesn't even think letting it sit for 12 months would be enough in order to dry it out from its flavor. What you have to do is first you have to soak it in water in order to extract whatever flavor you can extract from the dregs, then let them sit for 12 months, and then and only then are these dregs going to be acceptable. That is the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, let's go back to the Gemara. Amar, Haidudari Dechamra, we did that. Okay, Amrav Chaviva Breidurava, Haigufe Basu Tresa Yachi Shasei, Sharei. Leather flasks that were used for Stam Yenam. So again, empty it out, let them sit for 12 months, and they're going to be mutter. Amarav Chaviva, Hani, we're now on the top of Lamadalam and Beis. Hani, after Detaya Basatresa Yache Shasa Share. So basically, you have these like thermoses of the non, of the Goyim. It's Rashi describes them as being a very, very thick leather, but again, the same basic idea. In other words, empty out the contents, let them dry out there for 12 months, and it's good. Amarav Achabre de Rav Ika, Hani. Again, more items the Gemara is describing over here. Here we're talking about the residue of the grapes, meaning refuse of the grapes, right? Grape compost, if you will. It's you let it sit for 12 months, it dries out, it's fine. And finally, on this last one, the Gemara talks about earthenware jugs, black and white, let them sit for 12 months. Whatever grape content they had in it, whatever grape flavor it had in it, totally becomes mutter after 12 months. Okay, so basically what we learned together is that a 12-month process is going to dry it out. Right? Cautionary note for all of us here. This 12-month waiting period is all good for something of cold, meaning we're talking about wine storage. And so therefore we're not talking about a deep absorption into the kli. We're talking about some absorption into the kli, but not a deep absorption, even if it's kavush. And even if we say kavush kemavushal, but still, it's not bishal, it's not mamish heat. It's kemavushal, it's like it's cooked. But in other words, is this heter of 12 months going to be good for something where it was cooked, and there was heat, and there was mamish bishal being done in it? So that's a cautionary note that you have to seek guidance on that issue. You go to a posik on that issue. Right. In other words, we're talking about an Isser Minog. We're not talking about an Isser Isser. Right. Okay.
It's not 12 months.
Right.
It's missing
right.
A week.
Right. Right. Okay. Anyway, I guess that goes into the consideration. Okay. It's not my Minog, but. Okay, fine. But I understand your point. Right. I understood.
Is this something like Nosen Tam of Gam?
Yeah, it is something like Nosen Tam of Gam. But Nosen Tam of Gam, the halach is, we're going to see it later in the Masechta. You can't rely on Lechatchila, meaning Nosen Tam of Gam, meaning Bidyev, if I cooked in a pot that hasn't been used in 24 hours, so then it's fine. But you can't do it Lechatchila. Here, the Yud Beis Chodesh.
24 hours.
And that's 24 hours. Here, the Yud Beis Chodesh, a 12-month process, is something you could do, even Lechatchila. But as we pointed out, though, it's only by Stam Yenam. In other words, it's for cold storage of the wine. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara. Tanur Rabbanan Morias. Okay, now we talk about the Morias. Now the Morias, again, it's going to be a little bit difficult to speak to us. So we're just, in other words, it's not part of our diet, it's not part of our eating habits. But back in the day, so this used to be really popular, it's fish brine. Basically what they would do is they would take a whole collection of fish, they would salt it, and out would come some wonderful oils, and they would use it as like a condiment. And so, now sometimes the problem with Morias, in other words, that in itself is fine. We're talking now about basically the fat that comes off of a fish, the oil that comes out of a fish. As long as it's a kosher fish, we're all good. The problem is that it used to be that part of the makeup of the Morios is that they poured some wine into it as well. And so that's the concern. Obviously, if it's poured by a non-Jew, it's Tam Yenam. And so therefore, we have an issue, we have a consideration. So the Gemara now is going to be discussing Morios. Tanur Rabbanan Morios Uman Mutter. If it's the Morios of an Uman, if it's an expert Morios maker, so it's going to be fine. Rashi explains, three lines from the top. So first of all, Rashi points out it's not made from non-kosher fish. It's made from kosher fish. As I explained, because I got it from Rashi. In other words, it's because of the added wine that they put in. Beautiful. We're talking now about the first press. I know we're not talking about olive oil, but we're talking about the first extraction of the oil, the first and the second extraction. So there, the oil and fat that comes out of the fish, it's so good, it's so delicious, you don't want to put wine in there. Wine is going to be, it's going to be detrimental to the composite of the first and second extraction. So therefore, if it's made by a professional, and it's the first run of the second run, you're good, it's totally fine. And the Gemara says, that's what the Gemara is saying, Morias Uman Mutter. Rav Yehuda ben Gamliel, Omer Mishum Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, Af Chilek Uman Mutter. If Chilek is made by a professional, it's going to be good as well. Rashi over here explains, here I'll say the Rashi outside. But basically Rashi says like this, Chilek is basically a type of fish, it's a kosher fish, it's called saltanis, and it's generally speaking, when it's netted, so it's netted and it's a perfectly kosher fish. Although it's a little bit interesting, by the way, because the fish is not born with scales, but it develops scales over time, right? It's the opposite of the swordfish. The swordfish has scales in its developing stages, and then at some point in time, it loses its scales. Is the swordfish kosher? Most will say no. There are some who want to argue that it's kosher, but you'll seek guidance on the matter. I think it's conventional. The conventional response is that it's not a kosher fish. But anyway, so over here it's a kosher fish. The problem is that when you net it, so sometimes what happens is that in the net, so there are non-kosher fish, and some people are not careful to do the process of selecting the kosher and the non-kosher. But over here, if you go to a professional, since he wants pure chilek, so therefore he's going to go through the process of selecting kosher from non-kosher. Tani avima bered de Rabbi Abi Amorisum and mutter hu tanlava hu amrle pam rishon v'sheni mutter shlishi aser. As we already explained, the first and second extraction of the oil is good, like I explained already before, like Rashi explained already before. But again, all this is coming from the Gemara, because it's the oil is so good, you don't want to put in wine. There you don't have to put in wine. However, but from that point going forward, you're going to want to throw in wine. Okay, so the Gemara tells a story. There was a ship that came into the port of Akko, and they were preparing Morios on the ship. So Rabbi Abba now sets up a mashkiach. And now there's a mashkiach on the ship as it docks to the port. So Amalei Rava Adina Manatre. So Rava asked the question that you and I would have asked. Good. Now there's a mashkiach on the ship. That's wonderful. But they were making Morias on the ship before the ship reached the port. So you know, there hasn't been a mashkiach there full time. So it's very good now that we have a mashkiach. But what about all the Morias that's made beforehand? Amalei Ad Ha'idna Lamai Nechushla. So he says, look, at this point, up until this point in time, there's literally nothing to be concerned about. Because imishum dema arve b'chamra. So he says, maybe you're worried that he's going to throw some wine in. They're not going to throw any wine in. Now, it's interesting. We already know an argument to make in terms of why wine won't be thrown in. It's because it's the first or second press. But over here, there's also another consideration of why wine won't go into the Morias. Kisasa de Morias, beluma. Kisasa de Chamra, bedala lume. Think about how expensive wine is. Wine's very expensive. Wine is generally four times more expensive than the Morias is. So now, you wanna help out the Morias by pouring in wine? Wine to them was so expensive, it was too high ticket a price item to just simply throw into the Morias and pour into the Morias. So there is a significant financial consideration of why they won't put wine into the Morias. Now, fine. If that's true, so when they hit dock, so then why do I have to set up a Mashgiach now? If this is a legitimate argument that one can make in terms of why they won't put wine in, so now it's the same argument even as they dock. No, because now once they're in Eretz Yisrael, so you try buying wine in Eretz Yisrael, it's so cheap. I remember back in the day, when you used to go to people's houses for Shabbos, you buy wine, it was nothing. Wine is so cheap over there. And such was the case back in the good old days. So it was so cheap. So therefore, now we no longer have this financial argument anymore, and that's why now I have to step up Mashgiach. So Amalei Reb Yirmiyahu le Reb Zera, Dama I did the sore. Asu to Shavichamre. So he says, before the boat came to Akko, so it could have stopped at Tsur. Now Tsur happens to also be an area where wine is very cheap over there. So why don't you worry that maybe they stopped in Tsur, picked up some wine over there, and threw it into the Morias? So the Gemara says, Asam ikule b'shuri ika. The Gemara says, no, they didn't stop in Tsur. Don't worry. So the Gemara says, first of all, in Tsur you have these whirlpools. That's the way Rashi describes it. And also in Tsur you have snow coming off the mountain caps. And so basically, you can't dock. This boat did not dock in Tsur. So therefore, there was no other place that this boat could have docked in where they could have gotten cheap wine. This is their first opportunity for cheap wine. Now you have to worry about them buying wine and adding the wine into the Morias. So now I'll set up a Mashgiach. Prior to this point in time, it's not something I need to worry about. Okay, Adkan. Okay, and we'll start, Gvina will start with tomorrow. The cheese discussion coming up in the beginning of tomorrow's daf. Let's quickly recap. Today we talked about various utensils that may or may not need a rinsing process, meaning we learned about the milui, the irui, filling and rinsing out over soaking over a 3-day period, which takes us all the way back to daf lamed lamed gimel and aleph, the Gemara's discussion of when the absorption of wine storage is such where it requires this 3-day soaking period, when it does not, various different utensils that we described over the course of this morning. Then a visit to the town of Beit Ginza. Three questions that were asked, three questions that were not answered. The Gemara gave the answer for all three questions. The reason why that came up over here is because question number two was about the question of Yud Beis Chodesh, waiting 12 months after I emptied out an earthenware jug from its Tam Yenam, and now I wait 12 months. Is that going to be good? The Gemara says yes. The Gemara said yes in a number of different permutations, even by grape seeds, even by grape skins. Waiting 12 months is going to be good. Dregs. Also, waiting 12 months is going to be good, but then the Rishonim discussed whether or not we understand the Gemara Kipshuta. We went over that earlier this morning as well. And finally, the last discussion we had over this morning was Morias, the fish brine, which a concern is they added wine into the fish brine. And so the Gemara gave two arguments in terms of why when we don't have to worry about wine being added. One is during the first and second extraction, where they are so good, you don't have to worry. And two, if wine is so expensive, they're not going to waste their wine on adding it to fish brine.